We're going to cover the questions that involve stories as acts of faith. Now, if you have faith, it means you have to have a little trust. And so the questions that we're going to be addressing are, how do you trust yourself? How do you trust your story? And how do you trust your listeners, your audience, the people you're telling to? The first time this came up for me, I'm getting warm already. The first time this came up to me, oh, by the way, I should say that I'm Maren Hinderle, in case some of you just came into the village, or some of you are listening on the tape. And I've been doing a series of sessions on storytelling. The first time the question of trusting my story came up for me was when I was telling stories at a festival in Mineral Point, Wisconsin. Now, this was the first, just get a chair from the other room and bring it in if there aren't enough. Huh? There are no chairs over there?
They're taking notes.
Well, let's see. How about the kids come and sit on the floor, and then that'll let the people with the old bones rest their weary limbs. Oh, come up, come up, come in front where you can see. One thing about sitting on the floor is you can also lie down if you want to, you know, more or less relax. Is everybody... There's a chair over here. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that, you guys. Now, can everybody hear me? That was a good one. All right. Stories to trust stories as an act of faith. The first time I had to deal with this, I was in Mineral Point, Wisconsin, and I was scheduled to tell stories. It was the first festival I had ever performed at, and I was extremely nervous. That evening, we were going to tell a series of stories. It was called A Round Robin, and each one of the presenters was asked to tell a story, a 10-minute story, as an introduction to their storytelling. Well, it sounded fair enough. And there were 10 of us, so I figured by the time they were all through, well, I was the last one on the list, so probably everybody would have left for bed by the time they got to me. So I wasn't too nervous about it until I had been there for about 2 hours. Now, we were in an old inn. And on the second floor, it was sort of a clubhouse. And the storytellers were sitting in one space, and the people kept coming in from all over the countryside. They'd been driving all night, or some of them, and some of them had left after work that day. So they were arriving at 9, 10 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock. By 11 o'clock, people were sitting on the windowsills and spilling out the door. And I was hyperventilating, and my hands were sweating. I went outside and I did a few warm-ups. I was also singing a song with this story. It was the first time I'd ever tried doing that. And I was just petrified. I was sure I wasn't going to be good enough. And I came back in. Now all the dignitaries of the storytelling world were there telling their stories. And the man who told a story before me was can fight. He had been a Jesuit priest and decided to leave the priesthood to become a clown, and had studied clowning in San Francisco. Then started telling stories, and also used puppets. However, his puppets were not like any you'd ever see. He'd tell a story with a toothpick and a piece of gum. It was kind of like her brokering. So he sat down to tell his story. And he sat there. He always told stories with his shoes off. He felt that was a sign of respect. Sort of like Moses in front of the burning bush or something. And he said, "You know, storytelling is the art of the personality. Tonight we've seen 9 storytellers, and they've all had different personalities. And if they'd each of them just told the same story, it would have sounded different. But," he said, "although storytelling is the art of the personality, it is not an ego trip. When I tell stories in a state of trance so that the story can come through me." And then he told his story, and I felt like I got wings. I thought, I don't have to worry about whether I'm good or not. I'm just going to let my story come through me. Now, Ken, as it turned out, was like a tennis teacher that I read about in The Inner Game of Tennis. This is the story of the power serve. Once an attorney came to a tennis pro and said, "I want to learn the inner game's power serve." And the teacher said, "All right, well, why don't you just show me your stroke. Let's see how you do it." So he tossed the ball up and whacked it as hard as he could. All right, very good. Now, I just want you to toss the ball up in the air. So he just tossed the ball up in the air. He said, "All right. Now," he said, "I don't want you to think about hitting it hard, and I don't want you to think about where you're going to hit it. I just want you to think about the way the racket feels as you bring it down. So toss the ball up and bring the racket down. Just think about that." So he tossed it up and he started bringing it down. And pretty soon he was bringing it down so well that his wrist was snapping and the ball was whipping over the net, just like that. And the pro said, "Well, how do you feel?" The lawyer said, "Well, it feels pretty good. What's the problem?" "Well, I guess I'd like it to be a little more accurate." "Well, all right, let's get it accurate now. Just keep doing exactly what you've been doing, only add your focus on the point where you want the ball to land. Just look at that place and point your body to it." And he started serving. And sure enough, he was acing serves. It was fantastic. And the man shook his hand and laughed. But there was something about his attitude about the whole thing that troubled the pro. So the next week, when he came back for lessons on the power backhand, he said, "Wait a minute, before we do this, I just want to know, how is your serve this week?" "It was pretty good." "Well, why don't you show it to me? Let's see what you're doing." So he tossed it up and he whacked it down. I said, What happened? You had a great serve last week. What happened? And the man said, yeah, well, he said, it was a good serve. It was accurate. And it was fast and everything. But, you know, it just didn't feel right to me. But why didn't it feel right? Well, I felt like I couldn't control it. So, that's the scary part about telling stories. You can't control them. They go where they will, just like the wind. And that's why we have to trust the story. Now, as I grew up, my mother loved calligraphy, you know, printed different kinds of alphabets, and she loved quotes. She has books full of quotes, and if you walk into your room, you'll find all kinds of little pieces of paper with quotes written down on them. And you don't get a card from her without a little quote written in there. And the quote I grew up with was on a sampler on the wall, and it said, "Now faith is the evidence of things hoped for, the substance of things not seen. This is what stories are." To illustrate that, I'm going to tell you one more short story, and then we're going to practice trusting each other. We're going to practice trusting each other first by playing a game, a very short trust game. And then after we've done that, we're going to practice trusting each other by telling a few stories to each other. Here's the story. Once there was a man who had a herd of cows, and they gave the richest, the best milk of any cows in the whole countryside. He was very, very proud of them. Then one day he went out to the field to milk his cows, and they were dry. What's going on? So he went home without milk. The next day he went out again and he milked the cows, and once more they were dry. I'm getting to the bottom of this. Somebody is sneaking into my field and stealing the milk from me. So that night he slept in the field, and after the moon had risen and the stars came out, the sky opened up. And out of the sky, on long ropes, came the sky people, beautiful women with large gourds. They milked the cows and into their gourds, and then they climbed back up the ropes into the sky. The next night he was there too, watching them do it. But that night, as they prepared to climb back up into the sky, he went to the most beautiful woman, and he held her. And he said, "You are so beautiful. Will you marry me?" She looked at him and said, "I will marry you if I can bring my basket with me." "Oh, that's no problem at all. Of course you can bring your basket with you." So she brought her basket, and they lived together. She said, "You must promise me never to look into my basket until I have shown it to you." "All right," said the man, that's not a big deal. So they got busy, and they took care of their cows, and they prospered. She was an excellent wife. But as time went by, it started to nag at him. "Now she's got this basket, and I can't look in it. What is going on? After all, isn't she my wife? Don't I share everything I have with her? Shouldn't she be sharing everything she has with me? Why isn't she showing me that basket?" So he'd ask her, and she'd say, "I will, I will." Finally, he gave up asking. but he got more and more upset about that basket. Until one day, when she was out in the field with the cows, he looked. And then he laughed. When she got home that night, she looked at him and said, "What did you do today?" He said, "Nothing." She said, "Oh? You looked in my basket." "Well, what if I did? There was nothing there." "Oh, yes, there was. Because in that basket were all the things from the sky, and I was going to show you how to see those things. But now it's too late. Goodbye." So she took her basket and went home. And that's the story of the woman who came from the sky with an empty basket. Well, thank you for listening so carefully. So, I want you all to believe in your baskets now. Your empty baskets. They're full. Just like the stories. I wonder how we should do this. I think we'll put this in the middle. Now we have to stand up and push the chairs to the side because we're going to make a large circle. I'm going to put this over here so it won't get in anybody's way. Let's make the circle so it goes all the way around. I'm just going to keep this out so that I can put the instructions on the tape in case anybody who listens to this. Oh, wait, that's taped in too. Oh, great, we've got two. If anybody wants to get a tape and play it and do this at home, this game at home with groups that you know, that's just fine. No, let's stand up and just stand in a circle. Let's move a little bit farther this way. Be careful with your canes. Now, this is how we're going to do it. With a couple exceptions, we're going to have some special situations for people who have canes. But the basic way we play it is like this. The person standing in the middle closes their eyes. Now we're going to be practicing trust. The people on the circle are practicing trust. The person in the middle is practicing trust. The person in the middle closes their eyes. Then walks to the edge of the circle in as straight a line as possible without opening their eyes. And when I reach the edge of the circle, somebody will stop me gently and gently turn me around and send me in another direction. Now, people with balance problems, that have trouble balancing when their eyes are open, can take a guide with them. Did you observe any changes in the way I was moving from the beginning to the end?
More confident for you.
I relaxed. And I want you all to watch as those of people who are passing through the circle move and observe the changes that take place in them. Also, when you're closing your eyes, think about how you are perceiving the space you're in. Okay. Who wants to go first? And let's get this out of the way. Who would like to volunteer? Let's back out again a little bit so we have our regular. Put one on either end. See people leave because there aren't enough chairs. That's too bad. All right. Now, as we go around, could we borrow your talking stick?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to introduce you to someone who gives us courage to trust. And this sometimes is shown in something called a talking stick. Now, I'm not sure if this is a talking stick or not, but we kind of think it might be.
I don't know.
Because there's a mouth on it. In fact, there's a couple mouths on it, as you might see, if you look closely. Anyway, my friend here, and when we take we're going to pass this around, we're going to borrow it, and we're just going to pass it around, and each person gets to hold it and tell a little something, a little story, or maybe just a memory, a glimpse of a story. Whatever comes to your mind as you're holding the stick is what you're supposed to tell, right? Because this is the talking circle. So when you have the talking stick, you talk.
Does there need to be a continuity?
No. You don't have to. This is the empty basket. You just pull into your empty basket, take out whatever's there.
But it has to be about the can or an experience or something?
No, it doesn't have to be. It can be. Some ideas, you know. We've been dealing with trust. So perhaps that's touched some ideas in you about times when you've had to trust or when you found out you could trust or you couldn't trust. Things you've learned about trust.
This cane was carved by an member of the Aboriginal tribe in Australia. They do beautiful carving and very, very elaborate carvings, much more so than this particular one. We saw one building that they had used for meetings, and the whole building, the outside of the building, was carved. Every part of it was carved. And I needed the cane when I was there, and so I bought this in a store, in one of the stores where they sold these carvings. And the problem, one problem that they had was that the young people didn't want to work at carving. It was too slow. So the government of Australia, to encourage the young people to work at carving, established schools and hired some of the older men to teach them how to carve, and we visited one of those schools. And that's where I got this stick, was in Australia. I'll pass it on.
Good story.
Oh, I don't have any idea where to start. Well, I guess 18 years ago I had a knee pain injury, and I was supposed to not even live, rather than, and then if I was, I was a vegetable, and I was in the wheelchair and everything, and I was determined to walk again, and now I have a walking stick, but it's the hillsides and everything are just really too rocky, so I do carry a walking stick, but when I'm home, I don't. But it's a miracle that I was alive.
Sometime maybe it would be interesting, I'd like to talk to you some more, because it sounds like the story of how it happened would be really an important part of the miracle.
Well, let's see, 4 months ago, okay, another story. No, it's a continuing story. 4 months ago, I had a inside brace, and I had to walk over again. And I'm really, really slow, but I'm doing it.
You learned how to walk all over. Good for you. Well, you're doing very well. 4 months ago, imagine that.
Well, I relied on this side all the time, and now I have to, the physical therapist said, you have to walk normally. You can do it. You have the muscles to do it. And so I'm trying to walk normally.
Well, your accident reminds me of how I won World War II. I was rejected 3 times by the armed forces. The second time, shortly after we were married, and the rejecting doctors told my wife that if she took good care of me, I might last a year or two. And was she disappointed?
That, I should add, was a continuing story, was 46 years ago in June. So I think I've taken care of it. You know, half of it with a man is making sure he goes to a competent doctor. Well, I have a cane too. I don't use it at home all the time. I had an artificial hip put in 6 years ago, which was a terrible disappointment, but I managed to walk pretty well without a cane until the third week in May of this year. I was determined to get the porch washed and painted before I brought out the furniture for the summer. And somehow or another, in the process of doing that, I fractured my leg again, right beside and below the prosthesis. And so I find that a cane, or I had a lovely walking stick like this, helps me over the uneven ground and the places I'm not quite certain of, and makes me do what your therapist said, walk normally or evenly. Someday I hope to throw it away again.
On our way out here on the train, my husband kept putting a question to our two boys. If you went fishing, would you rather catch lots of little fish, or would you rather catch one big fish? And our oldest boy consistently said, I would rather catch lots of fish. That's Adam. And our younger boy, Matthew, kept saying, I'd rather catch one big fish. We hiked up to Heart Lake today, and we fished. And Matthew caught one big fish, the biggest fish, and his brother Adam caught lots of fish, a smaller fish. So you can trust that sometimes things do turn out for the best.
I'm from a small town in Western Washington, and I was born and raised there just about my entire life. I lived in Southern California for a little while, and one of the things that I really want to do in my life is go to the Middle East. And having been raised in the church and always been close to the Lord, I've always wanted to go to the Holy Land, but in the last several years, I have met a lot of Arab friends, and I want to go to the Middle East, and that's one of my goals, either through my career or just for travel. But I don't find the combination of going to that part of the world where I can see both worlds that exist there together. And that's a place that I've always wanted to go, I'd say for at least 20 years. And for a long time I just missed it because there was so much unrest in that place. But I finally realized that it's always going to be that way because of the difference in the people that live there. So someday I'm going to go and just trust that I'm going to get home again.
This is a real unusual face on this walking stick. Kind of reminds me of an old aunt I had who lived in South Dakota. She could tell the story. She told me a story one day. Her dog Spot died. He's about 15, loved to chase rabbits. And she didn't quite know what to do with old Spot. She lived in the city, and she didn't know what to do with his remains, so she called her sister who lived out in the country. And the sister said, well, bring Spot out here and we'll bury him out in the country underneath the tree. So then she had the problem of transporting old Spot out to the country. So she found her oldest suitcase, and Spot was a medium-sized dog, so he fit neatly into the suitcase. And she didn't drive. So she had to walk down to the bus. So she walked down to the bus, and this gentleman came up to her and said, can I help you with your suitcase? She said yes, and he ran off with her suitcase. She was standing there not knowing what to do, and the bus came along, so she said, well, my sister's expecting me, and I said, get on the bus and go out and see her. She went out to see her, and she walked up to the house. No one was there. She walked out back. No one was there. She went back in the house, and there was a burglar there. Well, she was so upset, having lost her dog that day, that she kicked the burglar and he ran out of the house. She sat around waiting for her sister, and she started thinking about that man that had stolen her suitcase, and she started to laugh. And then she started thinking about how much she was going to miss old Spot, and she started to cry, and she laughed and cried, and finally decided to go home on the bus. And on the way home on the bus, she laughed and she cried alternately, and the people on the bus thought she got home and said, that was really a dog day.
I think I'll tell a story. When I was very small and our family had to make a move, and of all the things I kept thinking about that I would be missing was a big tree that we had out in the backyard. And I really grieved over that tree. And as we drove from one state to the next state, you know, I was so sad because I was going to miss my tree. And I still remember when we got to our next home in this next state, there was a gorgeous tree, and I was so happy that I just went over and hugged that tree. And my trust was a tree that meant something to me.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I've always wanted to come to Holden and never really ever dreamed I'd get here. So this year, we had an invitation from our son and daughter-in-law, so we came. So, the dream fulfilled.
Oh, it's a happy ending.
I guess one of the people I've trusted most in my life was a grandmother I had. That was really one of the wisest people I've ever met, immigrated to this country from Czechoslovakia when she was very young. And it's awfully hard to believe now, but when I was small, I wouldn't eat. And she would tell me stories to get me to eat. And I remember one time I had a bowl of soup in front of me, and while she was feeding me the soup spoonful by spoonful, she was telling me a story about a little old lady lived in a poor home in Czechoslovakia on a farm. And it was obvious that the farm had seen better days because it was a little home with a thatched roof, and next to it was a place for chickens, but the chickens were gone. There were no chickens there. There was a little place to bring the cows in at night, but it was empty. And so it was sort of downtrodden looking from the outside. But it was neat and it was clean. And one day a fellow walked up to the door, looked like a beggar. And he said, ma'am, he said, could I do anything at all around the house to help you so I could get something to eat? I'm really on the verge of starvation. And she said, look, you don't have to do anything, but you can come in and share what I have. And she said, all I can give you is a bowl of soup. And he said, well, that would really be wonderful. So he sat down, and she brought the soup out, and she said, I'm really very, very embarrassed. I can't do better because I have hardly any butter left in the house, but I put the little piece I have left in there. And he was eating the soup, and as she watched him, she recognized that there was something different about him. And when he was about halfway through, he said, you know, you had very little butter left, and yet you gave it all to me, a beggar, and I want to tell you, I'm really Christ, and I've been walking around the countryside visiting people. And that little piece of butter you put in there made so many of these small little grease bubbles in the top of the soup. I'm going to give you a coin for every one of those little bubbles of butter. And of course, this was a tremendous, tremendous thing for her. And the following week at church, she was telling her neighbor, who happened to be a rich landowner, and described what happened and described the beggar and the fact that it turned out to be Christ. And sure enough, about a week later, this rich lady who lived in a big mansion on the side of the hill had a knock at the door, and this fellow said, ma'am, is there something I could do for you around the house? I'm really, really in need of food, and I'll do anything you want for a little bit of soup or something, or bread. And she says, you don't have to do anything, you just come in and I'll take care of you. And she made a bowl of soup for him and she took a whole quarter pound of butter. And as he was eating, he said, you know, ma'am, I really appreciate the fact that you've done this for me, and I'm really Christ walking around the countryside. And because you put all that butter in there, it's made one big bubble of butter around the soup, and I'm going to give you a coin for that. I haven't told that story until for 34 years.
Well, I'd like to tell you a story about, you have a rainbow, and I have a rainbow from Herb, right? Did Herb give you the rainbow for you?
Herb put that on to be able to decorate it.
Okay. I have a cute story about the rainbow that he gave me. Last night, he gave me a rainbow, and I put it in my pocket and zipped it up. I was going to keep it in my Bible, but it didn't get to my Bible. It stayed in my pocket. And this morning we went for a walk to Holden Lake. And there was a big black cloud coming over the mountain. And I thought, uh-oh, we're going to come home soaking wet to our skin and cold. And we made it to Holden Lake, and we were hungry. And the thunder started, and just as we sat down to eat, the rain started. I didn't mind the rain too much, but the thunder and the lightning I wasn't real thrilled with. So we moved under a tree, which we probably shouldn't have done, and I whispered a quick, please Lord, let the storm pass real fast so we can get home without getting soaking wet. And then I remembered the rainbow, and so I took the little rainbow out of my pocket and tied it onto my backpack, nice and neat. And it's so cute. Sun came out. It was so neat. The rain stopped. The sun came out. We had the most gorgeous walk home. There's such neat stories every day. Every time I look at that rainbow, I'll remember that this day. Do you want to tell a story? This little girl could tell more stories than anyone in this room, but she's only been here a year, and she's still learning the language. I can tell a couple real quick ones for her. Talk about trust. I remember the first day she sat in our kitchen eating dinner with us with tears. I mean, a social worker walks up to the door, knocks on the door, and says, here she is, and she had to walk into our family and really trust. When you think about that, it's kind of makes me cry. Maybe next time we come, Connie will be able to tell some stories of her own.
We're glad she's here, and we're glad you're here too. Thank you for sharing those stories with us.
I would like to tell you about a story of trust that I am uncomfortable with. And it has to do with a couple of my students, a pair of twins who are 15 years old. And probably a week and a half before Christmas vacation, their father died, and he was an alcoholic. And mom is also an alcoholic, and she's been out of the picture since the twins were 4 years old. So they had worked down at the docks last summer, and the family that they had worked for took them in immediately. And we all thought the kids started to come to school clean and well-fed, and they had enough sleep, and everything looked like it was going to go well. But then Children's Services said that these people's house was too small to keep these kids with them, and they would have to be moved. So they moved him in with the second family, and the kids again bonded, and things seemed to be going well. And then the week that school was out, I was home on Friday, and Saturday morning there was a knock on the door, and Michael, the boy, was at the door, and he came in, and he said, you weren't at school yesterday. And I said, that's right, Mike, I wasn't. He said, well, they didn't catch me.
I said, what do you mean they didn't catch you? And he says, Children's Services is going to move us again. And he says, I was swearing up and down the hall, and Mr. Price, the principal, was chasing me, and Mr. Stauffer, the social studies teacher, was chasing me, and I ran off campus, and you weren't there. And I felt really bad that I wasn't there. But I didn't know what I could have done at the moment if I had been there. And he went on and he talked a while and he said, but this time I didn't bother to pack. He says, if they're going to move me again, they're going to have to go in and pack for me. The only thing I took was my teddy bear. And I just about lost it with this big 15-year-old who is so kind and needs so much love and support at this time. And so I would ask you people to pray for these two kids and for me when they continue to knock on my door and tell me what's going on with them.
Well, all of you have been talking about trusting. I have one about something that made me mistrust. Dee told her story about wanting to go to Jerusalem and over in that area. And my husband and I had the privilege of going there about 4 years ago. And I don't want to scare you from going because it is a pleasurable thing to do. But when we got to Athens, I bought something, and I don't remember what it was anymore, and gave him American money, and they wouldn't give me American money and change. They made me take their money.
Well, we've had some remarks about rainbows, and it just happens I have a story that I want to share about a rainbow. At the moment, it's a very short story, because it's a story under creation. It's a story that my daughter has been writing. And she wrote it on the way to Holden Village in the car. And it's the first time that I'm aware of that she's tried to write a story, and I was just thrilled about it. And she illustrated it as well. So I don't know, the drawings are kind of small, so I'm not sure if you'll be able to see it. My daughter also loves rainbows, among other things. And the story is called The Hills of Rainbow. Once upon a time, there was a rainbow with hills. The rainbow was there every day, but one day the rainbow was not there. The rainbow went to a cave. The cave was very dark. The cave was full of monsters, and the cave was scary. I'll have to tune in later to find out more. That's great.
A couple weeks ago, I took a bike trip partway through Wisconsin, and it was in total a 150-mile bike trip, but the part that I biked with a friend, and we biked probably about 130 miles to get to the point, the highlight of our trip, and it was going through, there's old railroad tracks through Wisconsin that they've turned into bike trails now. And at the height of about an 8-mile hill on a kind of gravel road, so we were just dying on a hot day, we came to a 3/4-mile tunnel. And you could see the other end of the tunnel as you started through. And so we thought, well, this isn't going to be too bad. So we did start off on our bikes riding. And as soon as you went in, immediately within 2 feet, you could the temperature drop was incredible. And after kind of weaving through a little bit, my friend kind of fell off on the path into the side of the tunnel that was kind of muck and dirt, and so we decided, well, we better walk our bikes through. And you could kind of see the sides of the tunnel that it had been chipped out from the hill. There was also had been raining a lot the couple days beforehand, and there was a lot of rain dripping down through the tunnel, and so each time a raindrop would hit us, it would just kind of send shivers through our body, and we'd have to gasp for air. And it kind of got a little bit more scary as we got going through there, because there was one point when I looked down at myself and I couldn't even see myself. It became so dark. And then at the other end, there were some kids playing around, and they were making these howling sounds, which would come whirling around the tunnel. And you just felt like you were encompassed with spirits just following you throughout the whole way down the tunnel. So that's my story of
Was there a rainbow in there?
Maybe there is now.
Well,
Go ahead.
I live in an apartment building that on the ground floor, where it would be very easy to break in big windows, and an older building, and pretty much all you have to do is open the window and come on inside. And so I've lived there for about 5 years, and I've always thought, well, maybe someday somebody will come in. And sometimes people say, how can you live here, you know, because it seems so so easy to break into. And I said, well, I guess that might happen someday, but we'll see how I react. And one day I came home from work on a Friday night, and I went to dinner and went out and bought a few things at the shopping mall first, and got home around 10. And when I drove past the apartment, I could see that I thought I left the lights on in the bathroom and the kitchen. I thought, gee, that's funny. I don't remember leaving the lights on in the kitchen and the bathroom. And then when I drove a little further, I could see that the front door was standing wide open. And I just thought, oh no. It kind of gave me the creeps. And I thought, well now, what are you supposed to do when someone breaks in? And I didn't really think about it a lot, because later someone said that you should make a phone call and have the police check it out. But I was kind of mad. So I went inside, and, you know, I was going to kick out whoever was leaving. And I looked around, and a few things were out of place, and they shuffled through. And the bedroom, they'd gone through the drawers a little bit, and the bedroom was a mess anyway, because my clothes were all over it from a couple. I'd been so busy, I'd been tying my clothes up, and the dirty laundry, and the bed wasn't made, and it looked like a mess, and they had pulled a few drawers out. And so it wasn't much messier than how I left it. and the bathroom, the drug cabinet had gone through. So it didn't look like too much had happened. So right away, I called my sister and said, oh, someone broke into my apartment. You feel like you wanted to let someone know that right away. Yeah. And then I thought, no, I'll call the police now. So So as an exercise, I called the police. I thought it should be on record, you know. And so they showed up, and they wanted to see everything, you know. And I thought, oh, this is kind of embarrassing now. And I had noticed that nothing was taken, as far as I could tell. I wanted to explain to them before they looked in the bedroom that the burglars had merely opened a few doors, and that it normally looked like this, and that they hadn't ransacked the place. They said, did they get the TV and the stereo? And I said, no, they didn't touch it, because the TV and the stereo are about 20 years old, and they have a combined value of about $19. They didn't, and they said, how about drugs and money? You know, and I said, well, that's what they're after, see, in the pharmacy cabinet. And they said, yeah, they wanted all my drugs and money, but I didn't have any of either, so so that was a good thing. So finally, the police just wrote up a little report, and I was kind of concerned, you know, well, will they, you know, is this going to happen again, and how am I set for the future, and should I move, or what would you recommend? And they said, you don't have a thing to worry about. It'll never be bad. And I laughed for the rest of the week on that one.
That was pretty good. I just have something that built up my confidence, I have to tell about. The lady that owns this cane was one of the first persons I see or saw when I came to Lake Chelan. And I said to myself, if that woman has all the confidence to come here, and struggle with that cane, get on the boat, and up the steps, I thought, this has got to be a nice place.
Thank you.